Mark Mitchell's with us along with Stuart Nash. Morning, fellas.
Morning, Mike. Morning, Nashy. Mitch, how are you, Mike?
Very well indeed. Mark, congratulations. The National Party have finally come up with a policy of specificity. And so we have 85% December 1, whichever comes first. No more MIQ. Yep. Boom, go, we're open. I like it.
Yeah, people want their freedoms back, and it's time. People are getting vaccinated, so people need clear targets to be able to work towards. That's what our target is. It's realistic. It's as safe as it can be, and we're allowing people to get on with their lives again.
Only trouble is you're the opposition. It sort of doesn't count for anything.
No, that's true, but we have to hold the government to account, and so we put a firm line in the sand, and let's see if the government responds to that.
Well, you won't respond to it, will you, Stuart, other than to say that only 26 people died, and you're very proud of that, and we're doing a fantastic job, and Jacinda's the greatest Prime Minister in the history of the world. Am I correct, or am I correct?
Well, you did take the words right out of my mouth, Mike, but I'm pleased we do agree on that. But one thing I would say is I did listen to Chris Bishop's interview this morning. It was really light on detail. Chris, where did you come up with these figures? And he said, well, I think this is where it should be. Now, remember, this is the party that thought we should let Chinese citizens in the middle of COVID. And thank God Jacinda Ardern, our Prime Minister, took a much more concerted, considered view and said, no, we won't do that.
Two parts to that. Every number in the world, no matter what the target is a made-up number. There is no right or wrong number. It's just what number you're feeling comfortable with.
You're right, but there are informed numbers, and then there are numbers that you just pluck out of the air. And every number we had, every milestone we put in place is informed by public health experts, epidemiologists, and then we take a look at all the evidence and we make the best decision that we think is going to be best for your listeners.
In the plan that had all the detail, and it was released about a fortnight ago, and Chris Bishop is looking and our caucus is looking what's happening internationally. We're gathering data and information from around the world, and we've managed to put together the best plan for New Zealand.
85 you can't criticise unless you're going 90, but 85 or 90, it's high by anyone's standard. You don't actually have a target, though, Stuart.
Well, we're talking about milestones, and as you heard Chris Hipkins say, and as you heard the Prime Minister say, that the detail of the plan will be released on Friday. But this has been widely consulted with industry. I've made a number of phone calls myself to different sectors of the economy and our communities to get their feedback into this and to how it would look like and how we could implement this. But, you know, this is a well-thought-through, well-considered plan based on the evidence, and we think it's we think it is
Can you just confirm what I think Chris Hipkins said and alleviated a lot of our fears? We are not hanging out. So let's say your target's 90. We're not hanging out for every Maori in the country to get to 90%. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not going to release details of the plan, Mike.
Well, he seemed to, and that's what we want to hear.
Yeah, we believe the milestones we're going to put in place are eminently achievable, but we also believe the milestones are in place give all our communities, everyone listening to your show, the best chance for living life, getting back to normal, but also keeping them safe. Isn't that the most important thing? It is about protecting people from COVID
your,
in an environment where we know COVID's coming back into our community.
And your numbers, Mark, don't let every last man and his dog get jabbed, do they? So 85 is 85. Once we hit 85, if there's a region in the country or an ethnicity in the country that isn't quite there, that's life.
No, and we've got to continue to try and find out what motivates people to get vaccinated, but we can't wait around for the last person to get vaccinated. But the whole country's getting penalised for a few. And, in terms of Meriden, I'd just like to see the leaders step up and actually try to get people vaccinated. I know through level 4, I had to deal with illegal checkpoints and things like that, recognise the fear in communities in terms of what a pandemic can do. But the best thing they can do now is step up and get vaccinated.
All right.
I do think our Maori leaders are stepping up, to be honest.
All right. Let me come back to that later in the program if we've got time. The housing deal, Mark, let me start with you on this. Do you like what you've agreed with Labor, or are you building a whole bunch of slums?
No, we're definitely the aim is not to build slums, but we do recognise the fact that we do have a massive housing shortage, and actually getting rid of some red tape compliance and freeing up people to be able to deal with that is really important. The bill is going to go through a select committee process, so people are going to have the opportunity to have input into that, but we felt that that we need to do something and support something to actually get houses built.
From your point of view, Stuart, Andy Foster says this morning you didn't talk to anybody.
Well, Mike, if we'd spent 2 years consulting, we would have been in the gun as well. One thing I would say is, this is a really important piece of legislation and a great piece of work. The other thing I would say is, of course, is that building consents are still in play. So, you know, councils will have control over the quality of the work. So we're not building slums. In fact, what we are doing is building houses for first home buyers, which I think is really important.
Mark, three waters, you'll repeal it. Let me ask you this, though. I don't think it'll go through because they'll buckle. But if it goes through and you have to repeal it, you can't argue that there aren't parts of this country that aren't doing a good enough job, and some sort of slightly more centralised system might improve that.
No, and we've agreed to regulate it, overseeing and supporting councils to improve water quality, but we're dead set against a power grab from central government taking assets off ratepayers and councils that have already paid for them.
Having said that, Stuart, you went and consulted. They've all basically said no, bar a few. Are you going to go compulsion?
Well, Nanaia Mahuta will make some announcement on the way forward in this. But, Mike, I completely reject that this is a power grab. In fact, local councils and local communities will have a huge input into this. We reckon there's about a $60 billion infrastructure deficit up and down the country. And you are dead right when you said that there are a number of councils that actually can't afford to fix their infrastructure. So, you know, the vast majority of Kiwi ratepayers will have a choice. You know, if they went for the council and just stayed in the status quo, then my understanding is they'd end up probably paying hundreds of dollars more in rates a year in order to get the water infrastructure up to where it should be.
That's your argument. But the councils have said, sorry, Mark, you go.
No, I was just going to say, Nancy, so why doesn't the central government just get along if they're going to mandate better water quality, which is a good thing? Just get alongside the council and give them the funding directly to make the changes.
We're a country of 5 million people, you know, a long country with relatively small population density. Sometimes you can actually get huge efficiencies out of economies of scale.
But this may well be the case.
This is your problem, is you haven't been able to show that or demonstrate that, and instead you're just coming in with a wholesale sledgehammer, taking assets off.
No, I reject that. I mean, Nanaia Mahuta has consulted widely on this.
And the point is, Stuart, and what Mark's saying is it's been rejected. They don't want it. Rightly or wrongly, they don't want it.
The thing is, Mike, is that you got it right when you said there are a number of councils that actually just haven't got the money.
No, I know, I get that. But in a democracy, what you allow them to do is to fail, to say, sorry, you know, you chose it, you live with it, you lie with it.
I don't accept that, Mike. Yeah,
so you know better than they do.
No, but I don't accept that we should let councils fail. It's like, I do accept that government has a responsibility to look after citizens in this country. I absolutely accept that, and I would hate to think that anyone listen to this program.
Well, then why have councils?
End up with water poisoning because their councils have good infrastructure.
Well, what possible reason? You let them do housing consents. You trust them on housing, but not on water.
No, councils play a really important role in our communities, and you know I'm a huge fan. I fought against amalgamation across Hawke's Bay, and I'm a huge believer in the value of councils, and they do a fantastic job. But they will continue to have significant input into
go
Wales.
Go, Mark.
You've got a Labor mayor in the biggest city in the country with the best water quality saying to you that you're not going to take our assets.
We're not stealing assets in any way, shape, or form.
You're coming in with money and saying, give them to us, and we'll give you some money. And when they say no, you'll go down the compulsion route.
So, you know, in Hawke's, let me give you an example. Hawke's Bay, there's four councils, right? Wairoa, Napier, Hastings and Central Hawke's Bay. The mayors are fantastic. The councillors do an awesome job. They represent their communities well. But in order to fund the infrastructure in Hawke's Bay costs a hell of a lot of money. And the ratepayers of those four councils would end up paying substantially more if it was four councils each individually doing their water projects.
That's your argument. And I hear your argument. They've rejected it. They've gone, yep, I see what you're saying. We don't want it.
Unlike the National Party, I don't think that governments should let councils fail and therefore let our citizens down. I really don't think that. It's been our approach the whole time, Mike. It's why we put a well-being policy. It's our approach to COVID. It's our approach to everything. We believe what is right for our communities is right for New Zealand.
Mate.
That's a classic big government condescending socialist approach to local government. Hey, Mike, just very quickly, you'll love this one. Labor MP has had a bill drawn from the ballot requiring the government to use plain language. It's called the Plain Language Bill. So you've got a Labor MP that's totally confused with what their own government's saying.
Mandate, Stuart. Health, education so far. Prison guards, as of last night, they're not happy because you didn't consult them. Master builders want one. You're going to go with the builders?
Well, what I would say to any organisation that wants mandating, I would go and have a look at the WorkSafe and Employment New Zealand websites. There's some really, really good guidance there on what employers can and can't do.
All right. I don't have to... Just actually, I do. Bugger it. Mark, explain to me really quickly, 30 seconds, why are Maori different? Why is the Maori vaccination rollout so ethnically based when all that's required is an arm and a needle and that's it?
I just think that there's a natural suspicion there, which you know, which is probably historic, but I just think that that's why local leaders right across New Zealand have to step up, give them the information, give them the confidence, and allow them to get vaccinated. It's the best protection that they can have against COVID.
Stuart?
There are a number of really important conversations being had up and down the country. Our Maori MPs are engaging these.
Yeah, I get that, but why are Maori different? What's so unique about Maori with an arm and a needle?
Look, I can't answer that, Mike, but what I would say is that we do have to have conversations, and what we do know is telling people, you know, there's the fear conversation, if you don't get this, you're going to die, which doesn't work, and then there's the community-based conversation, is, look, if it's not for yourself, mate, then how about doing it for you?
Yeah, but they're the same conversations everyone's had. That's not an ethnic answer. There's something allegedly so special and different about Maori that they need a whole lot of buses and money and vans and ministers and discussions and tents. And...
I know, it's about doing what's right for our communities, Mike. I mean, I will never apologise for Labor working hard for those who are more disadvantaged than others. And you know, there are some communities in our society that need a little bit more love than others. I mean, I think government's role is to look after them and make sure that they have the same opportunities as everyone.
All right, got a motor. Appreciate it very much, Stuart Nash, Mark Mitchell.